part one of the interview with Benjamin Kinnerick on CameraWaves.com. So the first real question would be, do you have any awards for photography?
Yes, I do. Well, how far back do you want me to go? Recently I won the Canon Photographer of the Year, which was about a year and a half ago, Photographer of the Year in France. I also won the Marie Claire Magazine Award for Best Advertising a few years ago for the Lux soap campaign, which was done by J. Walter Thompson Agency. I won the Shit Disturber Award on DP Reviews.
Very interesting.
I've won approximately about 13 citations. I've been cited in Strategies Magazine, CB News, a magazine that used to be called Creation. I was on a television program called Mode, which means fashion, mode and music. I don't know if being chosen to expose at different events is considered an award, but I I recently exposed in Barcelona, Spain, at a thing called Santa Bach, S-A-N-T-A-B-A-C, which is and the exposition, the whole theme of the exposition was anti-fashion, and they featured a story I did called Domestic Health Fantasies, which was pretty indignant and pretty anti-fashion. I am going to be exposing again in Cannes next year in July at the 5th Festival of Fashion Photography, and just all kinds of stuff like that.
That's awesome.
You know, I've been doing it since 1980. You know, I don't know how I got into photography, but I certainly never ever considered becoming a photographer. That was the last thing on my mind.
Okay.
In fact, had you listed 100 professions prior to my getting into photography, photography would definitely not have been one of them.
Huh. You actually answered my next question, kind of, which was how long have you been a professional photographer?
Well, the day I bought a camera, I was stupid enough to. I started shooting professionally, I would say, is when I opened a studio in Toronto in 1980. Prior to that, what had happened was a girlfriend of mine and myself were looking in Toronto, you know, it's all houses, and we were looking to perhaps share a house with somebody, and I found an ad in, I think it was the Toronto Star, someone was looking for a roommate of a house in sort of midtown Toronto. And I went to see this house, and it looked good, and I met this girl named Cindy. And I walked into her living room, and hold on. I'm so sorry, I should have turned off my mobile.
That's fine.
Where was I? Yeah, anyways, I walked into the house, and in the middle of the living room was a metal box with knobs on it, a pole, and an umbrella.
Wow.
Now, you know, we all know what that is, but in retrospect, I'm trying to give you my retrospective knowledge of photography. It was a pole with an umbrella on it, and I thought, wow, what's this? And I looked at her and said, what do you do? And she said, I'm an assistant to a photographer. And he happened to be one of the top photographers, I guess in Toronto. His name was Larry Miller. And she told me she was an assistant. I said, okay, cool. So I decided to take the place. And at that time, I was still doing architecture. I was working for a company called Webb, Zaraf & Menkes in Housden, who were the architectural firm who designed the CN Tower in Toronto when I was working on something. And I was also, at the same time, I was playing drums in a punk rock group called The Poles. Okay. And every day, pretty well every day, Cindy would get phone calls, which she would answer, from a lot of people, you know, stuff. I didn't know what it was. And then one day she wasn't in, and a girl calls, and I answer the phone. I said, hello, and she said, is Cindy there? And I said, no. She said, well, can you tell me why Cindy hasn't returned any of my phone calls? And I said, I don't know. I'm really sorry. I'll leave her a message. And then she said, well, why doesn't Cindy want to test with me? And I never heard that term before. I said, well, what's a test? And she said, well, take my pictures. Now, I happened to have, at that time, a Voigtlander camera. And I happened to have a little mini black and white darkroom, because when I was in architectural school, I learned how to develop black and white film and stuff. And I had absolutely no vocabulary whatsoever about fashion. I didn't look at fashion magazines. The only thing I saw that would be considered fashion would be a movie I saw called Blow Up, okay? Mm-hmm. And I said to her, well, I'll take your picture. And I guess she assumed, because I was living with Cindy, that I must be a photographer. So I had never in my life ever done a photo shoot. And so I figured, if I'm going to impress her, I better stick a long lens on my camera. I better put a flash on it. I didn't know why, but I knew it would look good. So she came over to the house. We went out to a park. I shot two rolls of film. And at the end of the shoot, she did something really weird. She asked me, well, when would it be ready? I said, well, I'll make some contact sheets. And she handed me $60. And I said, what's this for? And she said, it's for the test. I went, okay, cool. So we had done two clothing changes. Now, I'll bring you up to date today. If any photographer tests, which I don't anymore, but when they do, if there are two clothing changes, generally, out of two clothing changes, you would probably choose two images from the two clothing changes, one from each, and perhaps a headshot. So you're looking at anywhere from 3 to 4 prints. Now, I didn't know any better, so what I did basically was I developed the film. It was horrible. It was really dusty, and I had a dust all over the contact sheets. It was horrible. It was the worst probably I would easily be considered the worst photographer on the face of this earth. So I showed her the images, and she ordered 35 prints. Now, I wasn't trying to take advantage of her. I just didn't know any better. At the end of my making her 35 prints, she handed me 35 times $7, so she ended up passing something like $250 to me. So my very first shoot in my whole life was a test, and I made almost $300. Now, my second shoot of my whole life was a huge ad campaign. Now, that is just incredible. I was in the subway in Toronto, and I now had a vocabulary. I knew one word. It was called test, okay? Mm-hmm. And I was on the subway, and I see this incredibly gorgeous girl carrying a book, carrying a portfolio in retrospect, because I didn't know what it was. And I look at her, and I go, holy jeez, she's beautiful. And I'll never forget her name, because she was the first real model I ever shot with. Her name was Lucid D'Arcangelo. And I walk right up to her, and I say, excuse me, are you a model? And she said, yeah. And I said, she said, why? And I said, because I'm a photographer. And she goes, oh, yeah. And we get on the metro. I get on the subway, and she sits down and taps the seat next to me. I sit next to her. I'm wagging my tail. And I'm looking at her book, and I have this word, and I go, I've got to use it. And I look at her and say, excuse me, would you like to test? And she goes, yeah, why not? Now, I knew nothing about putting a test together. She said, well, Benjamin, where are we going to get the clothes and all that stuff? And I went, geez, I don't know. And so we ended up, so what happens is I'm at her place, and we're trying to put a shoot together, and I call up this boutique in Toronto at the Eaton Center called Kalesh Boutique. And I was sure, I was certain, the second I call and ask to borrow clothing, they're going to say, go forth and multiply. There's no way. We're not going to give you clothes. Who are you? And this is literally what happened. I get on the phone, and I'm humming and hawing. I go, excuse me, I want to do a photo shoot, and I'm shooting with a model. And literally mid-sentence, the woman said, get down here right away. I went, oh, okay. I go down to the boutique with Lucid, and they give us anything we want. Now, what we didn't know is what they were about to do was totally illegal. But nonetheless, because I didn't know any better, I stuck a flash on my camera. The Eaton Center is like basically like shooting in a daylight studio. It's totally covered in glass. So you have this incredible light coming in, and I mixed it with flash. Now, little did I know that I was replicating a really well-known photographer named Steve Hyatt by doing that technique, but I would never have been able to recreate it at that time because everything was accidental. So nonetheless, after the shoot, the boutique ordered $600 worth of prints and advertised in the Toronto Star supplement once a week, and every week for probably 2 months they were running my pictures as an ad campaign, which they never paid me for. So that's my mouthful. That's how I got started in the business.
Wow, crazy way to get into photography.
Yeah, totally. And then after that, I started, you know, running these horribly tacky ads. I mean, just, I mean, I cannot believe how tacky they were. I actually wrote something like, "We do professional portfolios at reasonable rates." Now, who is we? It's just me. Anyways, and so I get calls from tons of people, of which perhaps one in 500 could perhaps get up to the first or second rung of modeling in Toronto, which was provincial. Mm-hmm. And it was just a way of making money. And one day I was at a party at an agency in Toronto called, at that time it was called International Top Models, and I ended up meeting this guy who's a really great photographer. His name's Joseph Ciancio, and we started talking. He said, "Hey, Ben, now, you know, it's, what are you going to do for a studio? I mean, you can't test outside. The winter's going to come." And I said, "I don't know." He said, "Well, there's this incredible warehouse in Midtown Toronto that are renting out spaces, and if you take a lease, the owner of the building will literally design it and build it to spec to whatever you want within reason. They'll actually design it." And being that I was an architect, it was pretty incredible. So I ended up renting not a very large space, about a 1,200 or 1,300 square foot space, and I designed it, and I had a really nice three-walled cyclo so I could shoot in three different directions, and I basically opened my studio in 1980, and I'd never used flash before, and I started by buying a Norman flash unit with three heads, and I figured, well, what should I buy? And I bought two umbrellas and a softbox. I didn't know what they were for. I had no idea. I just set them up because they looked impressive. And basically, I stayed in Toronto for about a year, year and a half. And I was the first Canadian to ever shoot Kim Alexis for the cover of Chatelaine magazine. And that's another story completely. We could go on ad infinitum. But I basically got her because there was a company called Nails and Lashes who wanted me to shoot their ad campaign, and they had a very tight budget. They had a budget of around $2,000, $2,500 to do everything. That would be the model, hair, makeup, my fee, development, prints, whatever they needed. And one night I was lying in bed fantasizing, and I thought, and at that time the two top models were Brooke Shields and Kim Alexis. And they were literally, 1 month you'd have Brooke Shields on the cover of American Vogue, the next month you'd have Kim Alexis. And I'm lying in bed, and I had this fantasy, and I was so engrossed in the business at that time, passionately. I so badly wanted to shoot her, I came up with a scheme. And the scheme was the following. I would call Ford Agency in New York. Wilhelmina. Wilhelmina was her agency. I would call Wilhelmina Agency and see if she's available, first thing, for a certain time frame. So I called Wilhelmina Agency, and I gave them my name, and they go, "Who?" And I said, "Well, you know, just a little plebeian nothing living in Toronto." And I said, "Look, I would really love to shoot with Kim Alexis. What's her daily rate?" And they said, "Well, she's $10,000 a day." Even I said, "Oh, geez, could I book her for 2.5 hours? And they started laughing. I mean, literally, just keeled over, and they said, "You want to book her for 2.5 hours? You're kidding, aren't you?" I said, "No." And they said, look, she's totally booked. She's booked for the next 3 months. But give me your name and phone number. If anything happens to come up, we'll call you." So I called up my client, and I said, "Look, I have a question." And basically, all they were going to do is take a quarter page ad in TV Guide. It was just horrific. I asked my client, I said, if I could get Kim Alexis, would you want her? And they went, oh, Ben, are you kidding? Of course. You can't get Kim Alexis. I said, well, if I could, would you take her? He said, yeah. Would you just pay for my airfare to New York? I will not take a centime. I won't take a penny. You just pay Kim Alexis for the time I shoot with her. I don't want a thing. And he said, you're willing to do that? I said, absolutely. So I called up the number one fashion magazine in Canada. Now, you have to understand, they didn't know me from Adam. I had only been shooting for about 10 months. And I call up Chatelaine magazine, and you want to talk about treating someone like the stuff you walk on. I called them up, and I said, hello, my name is Benjamin Kanarek. They went, who? I said, my name is Benjamin Kanarek, and I may have Kim Alexis. And they said, hold the line, please. The fashion editor of the magazine gets on the phone and said, who the hell are you?
So
she goes, Hans Lichtenberg cannot get Kim Alexis. Larry Miller can't get Kim Alexis. Who are you? I don't even know who you are, and what are you making up? I said, look, all I want to know is if I can get Kim Alexis, would you want her? They said, would we want her? We've been wanting her for the last 2 years. It's never going to happen. It's impossible. I said, I just need to know if I can get her. They said, yeah, of course. And they hung up on me, literally in my nose. Let me tell you something. 3 weeks after the initial call to Wilhelmina, I get a phone call from Wilhelmina, and she's really sweet and really cute, and she goes, Ben, I've got great news for you. There's an opening on this date. I said, you're kidding. She said, no. I called up. Okay, I went, this is incredible. I'm getting excited just talking about it. I call up Chatelaine magazine, and I said, I've got Kim Alexis.
Wow.
They went, no, you don't. I said, yes, I do. They said, okay, we'll get back to you. Check this out. An hour or two later, I get a call from New York City, from Wilhelmina, and they go, Benjamin, we have to ask you a question. It's really weird. Is it normal that a secretary calls us from a magazine saying we're not sure if this guy is full of shit or not, but do you have an option with Kim Alexis for Benjamin Kanarek? And they said yes, okay? So I called up Chatelaine, and I just railed on them. I said, what have you done? They said, oh, really sorry. No, check out the turnaround. Oh, real, real sorry, Benjamin. Oh, we're going to come down to the office. We're going to arrange to get Calvin Klein and Klein. Which they did. So they basically put together 3 major clothing changes. I get to New York. I fly to New York. They pay my bill. My sister comes with the clothes. I don't have enough money to rent a studio. I haven't got a pot to piss in. But Wilhelmina, in their kindness, said, look, Benjamin, we'll rent you a space in our agency. It's where models practice. You can set up a backdrop, set up your lights in there. Kim Alexis shows up 10 minutes late, and she apologizes adamantly. She was very professional. I'm shaking like a leaf. I'm looking at her and going, I can't believe I was shooting Kim Alexis. So I shoot her. I get back to Toronto, and I immediately get the April 1980 or 80 cover. Then I get another cover in May and another cover in June. And from that point, things just took off for me. It was like, there it is. That's how it started.
Well, so that was kind of like your big break right there, like where you really started.
That was my big break, absolutely.
Yeah. That's a lot of, I don't know what to say. That's just it.
Yeah, I know. It's called luck.
Yeah.
Not just luck. I was so focused on what I wanted that I got it.
Yeah, you seem very determined on getting it, which is probably
Oh, yeah, I was, Yeah, at that point, after about a year of eating magazines and sucking in all of the information, I started to become a fanatic.
All right, next question is, what was your hardest moment in photography? Like, this could be any moments that were...
Hardest moment, did you say?
Yeah, the hardest, like...
Okay.
Yeah, maybe like a bad situation, just where you got completely screwed.
Oh, man. Okay, Can you be more precise? Because I have a shitload of them, so I don't know where, you know. Technical screw up or business screw up?
I'd probably say business screw up.
Hmm. Okay, let me think. Business. Oh yeah. Well, that one's not so bad. Yeah, I can give you one that kind of really recent one that kind of pissed me off. I don't know if you've heard of Swarovski. They do crystal jewelry, and I did their world campaign for a company called. Oh, this is going to get me in more shit than I can want. Oh, anyways, I did a campaign for the world campaign for Swarovski. And being the way it works with ad agencies is when a client goes with an ad agency, they usually sign, that client will generally sign a contract for about 3 years, because it takes about 3 years to develop concepts or to maintain concepts for the, you know, for the client to become climatized to the ad agency, et cetera, et cetera. Now, what happens in general is that the ad agency will get paid a set forfeit, a set fee by the client for their actual work, and then they'll be given, obviously, budgets to do different ad campaigns. And different ad campaigns will mean, for example, when Swarovski wants to buy a page in Elle magazine, they're paying $30,000. And so they're going to place, you'll have what's called media buying, who will decide what support their advertising will go in, et cetera, et cetera. So they'll have a global budget. Now, that global budget is given, now when a production's done, the budget of each production, and they know exactly how many productions they want to do a year. They, perhaps they have two different lines per year, one definitely for Christmas, another's perhaps just before the summer, they're going to advertise their new line just before everyone goes on vacation. So they're basically two seasons. And so they know how much money they're going to spend, okay? And they might have, I'm not speaking about Swarovski, but generally a very large client like Lux might have $50 to $150 million a year to spend on advertising. Now, within that budget, there are the production budgets, which, you know, mean putting together a shoot, which would mean the model, the hair, the makeup, the photographer, the location, what it's going to cost in terms of how many pages they're going to buy in how many magazines, and that's a lot of money. Well, I was called in to do this campaign, and I found out something that really pissed me off. When they negotiated my fee, something was very bizarre about the fee. It was a little bit, it was actually quite a bit lower than what I should have gotten for what I did. And basically, I became kind of friendly with the client. And I found out after the fact that the reason they lowballed me was they had spent all of their money during the year for, they went over budget on everything they did. And basically, the monies they were spending on this campaign was monies, were monies that had to come out of the pocket of the ad agency. So as a result, not only myself, but the model, everyone else, got close to 100 to 150% less than they should have gotten for a world campaign. That was recent.
Wow.
Other things that have happened, I've actually done shoots that haven't been published. That's happened twice in my career, actually, and that's where you actually are commissioned to do a photo shoot. Everyone's psyched to do it. Everyone's putting in a lot of energy. We know we're going to be published in a very prestigious magazine. It doesn't happen. Now, it's just come to me. I do have the worst thing that's ever happened to me. Okay, this is a beauty. I was living in Italy. All right, you've heard of Harper's Bazaar magazine?
Yes.
Bazaar, yeah. Okay, so I was living in Italy. And you have to understand that the competition in my métier is, I mean, if you think acting is cruel, with the music business, this is like sharks. I mean, you know, when I got into it, someone would say, hey, Benjamin, there are 10,000 photographers in New York. You're crazy. You're never going to make it. And in my stupidity, I said, well, yeah, maybe there's 10,000 photographers, but there's only one Benjamin Kanarek. And so that was my attitude. So here I am, I left New York City. I was really doing well financially. I was making a fortune in New York. Really, I was raking in. I mean, my daily rate, even in 1983, was between $5,000 and $8,000 a day. Okay,
wow.
That was my daily rate, not including royalties for usage, et cetera, et cetera. But I was extremely unhappy because I wasn't shooting what I wanted to shoot. I really, man, in retrospect, I really. You know, anyways, I wasn't shooting what I wanted to shoot. I wanted to do really, really strong imagery, and I knew that the only places to be to do that would be either Paris or Milan. So I decided to move to Milan, and I went to Milan. I didn't know anybody. I just went there with my Nikon gear at the time. I had a couple of FM2s with motor drives, and I don't even think I had lights. I think I might have had lights. Yeah, I think I had a couple of Speedotrons or something, mini Speedotrons or whatever. Yeah, I did have lights, come to think of it. That's right, I was able to test with it. So I moved to Milano, and I moved into this place called the American Hotel, and it was like all of these American photographers from Canada, just trying to get their books together, you know, testing, and just trying to make their books look good. And I started to test, you know, and I starved there. I basically, you know, didn't work at all. And in New York, I'd done a lot of interesting work. It still was pretty shitty, actually, when you, in retrospect, but it was stronger than what I was doing in Toronto and L.A., because I'd moved from Toronto, L.A. to New York and then to Milan. And I had a meeting with this guy named Paponi. Now, he was the owner of Italian Harper's Bazaar and Cosmopolitan. And I kid you not, this is exactly what happened. I went in, my knees were shaking, and it's this incredible palatial building in Milan. And I'm waiting out in the foyer, and Paponi's assistant comes out and says, Paponi is busy, I hope you don't mind, but he won't be ready for at least half an hour. So I waited for about half an hour, and his assistant says, okay, you can come in now, Paponi's ready to see you. And I walk into this office. I mean, it must have been, let me think, the office alone could have been about 1,000 square feet.
Well, that's huge.
I mean, it was the most incredible space I'd ever seen. There were antiquities all over the place, African decor. And here he was sitting behind a huge oak desk with a huge light box directly behind him on the wall. Because the way he used to look at stuff was he'd turn around, hold up the slides, and because I shot in slide film, I didn't shoot negative. And he'd look at stuff that way. And then he had a light box on his desk. And I walk into his office, and I say, hello, Mr. Paponi. He doesn't look at me. All he's doing is looking at, because he'd taken my book in, the assistant, prior to my going in. All he's doing is he's looking at my slide sheets. And the words that came out of his mouth were the following, literally. He said, Benjamin, I have not seen work like this in over 10 years. This work is incredible. You're coming with me to New York, to Paris, to Tokyo. You're going to shoot all of my haute couture. You're going to shoot all of the major fashion for me in Harper's Bazaar, Italy. And I want you to start right away. I was like, oh.
God.
Now, he knew I shot a lot with gelatin at the time, colored gelatin. That was my thing at the time. And he said something to me. He said, Benjamin, shoot any color you want, but don't ever shoot yellow. I said, oh, okay. Now, I must have a death wish. Okay, so I start doing shoots for them. Okay, for the haute couture, for the special mode, special fashion, it's called. And I'm shooting literally every day. There's a studio at Harper's Bazaar, and I'm shooting with all these different models, incredible clothes, Valentino, Versace, Ungaro, Gucci, Dior, Chanel, everything for the collections. And he's gone. He left. I think he went to New York or something for some business. Mm-hmm. And on this one day, there were all of these gold dresses. And I thought, hey, gold, I'm going to use orange, yellow gelatins. Oh, my God. And I did it. And so you know, he gets back, he's looking at all the images, and he's going, oh, this is great, this is great. And he falls on the gold ones. He looks at me. He's turning beet red, and he goes, are you insane? I said, no. What did I tell you I didn't want? And I said, well, let me explain myself. And I had absolutely no regard for authority, and he basically told me to get the F out of his office, and I never want to see you again. So none of my stuff got published in Harper's Bazaar. A week after that, his wife, who she hated him and he hated her, she was the head of Cosmopolitan. She headed off. I got a call from her, and she said, are you Benjamin Kanarek? I said, yes. I just saw the images you did for Harper's Bazaar, and they're incredible. Would you like to shoot a story for Cosmo? And I'm sure she did it just to spite her husband. So I went to see her, and I ended up getting a shoot, and it really turned out really well. I come back to Harper's Bazaar, because Harper's Bazaar is the same building as Cosmo, and I'm showing her the images. And I have to get up. I leave the office, I think I went to the can or something, and her husband walks in. And my stuff is on the white box. He's going, wow, this is beautiful. This stuff's incredible. It kind of reminds me of another photographer I worked with. What's his name? And she looked him straight in the face. I said, Benjamin Kanarek. And I could hear them screaming. Like, you're not going to publish this. Oh, yes, I am. And so, yeah, it did come out. And that's my story about Harper's Bazaar. Anyways.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
It's funny how his wife was hired you in spite of him. Or maybe she just noticed you had good work.
Well, I think it was two things. I don't think she would have worked with me if it was shite, but she knew what went down. Because after that one shoot I did for Cosmo, which I'm really proud of, I never shot with them again. Mm-hmm. And I was so broke, I had to move back to Canada. I had a good friend of mine named David Yaxley, who's still there, who heads up Sears in Canada. And I called him. I said, Dave, I'm starving. He said, how much do you need, Kanarek? I said, I don't know. I got to make at least $7,000 or $8,000. He said, all right, get back. You know, so he gave me, like, tons of work. And I ended up meeting this guy who was an assistant, and he used to test at a place called Judy Welch Model Agency, and I just finished shooting some Vogue covers for Mexican and South American Vogue, and he came up to me and said, can I assist you? And I said, yeah, okay, cool. And he said, Ben, have you ever considered moving to Paris? I said, no, I don't want to go to Paris. I want to move back to Milano. And he convinced me to just check Paris out for a week or so, and I did, and I... first couple of days I was in Paris, it was in November, it was horrible, it was raining, and I was real depressed, and then it got sunny. And I went to a place called the American Church to look at ads to perhaps find a place to live, and I went to the American Church, and because I checked into this really cheap hotel, and I found this woman who was looking for a roommate, and that's how I started in Paris. And within 6 weeks of being in Paris, I shot the Haute Couture for L'Officiel magazine, which is the competition to Vogue here, and that's how I ended up.